You recall the story from last week from the book of Ruth, chapter 1, and this picks up where we left off. There happened to be a man in Bethlehem by the name of Boaz, and he was rich and influential. He also happened to be a relative of Elimelech, who was Naomi's husband. One day Ruth came to Naomi and said, "I think I should go out into the fields to glean the harvest that the harvesters are leaving behind." Naomi said, "Okay, fine, my daughter, you go ahead." So Ruth went out into a field and she began to pick up the excess harvest from the harvesters that were leaving it behind. And it just happened that she was in Boaz's field. Boaz was in town in Bethlehem and returned back to his farm. And he greeted all of his harvesters by saying, "The Lord be with you." And the harvester said, "Bless you as well." He noticed Ruth and he said to his foreman, "Who is that young lady over there? Who does she belong to?" Foreman said, "Oh, well, that's Ruth, the Moabite. She's the one that came back with Naomi. Remember that? She's been here all morning, working very, very hard. She asked me if she could glean the fields after the harvesters were done, and so I said, sure. She's only taken a little break in the shade." So Boaz went over to see her. He said, "Hi. Why don't you stay here in my fields? Don't go to someone else's fields. Stay here in my fields. I'm going to tell my men not to bother you at all, okay? You'll be safe here." And Ruth was overjoyed by this. She fell at his feet and said, "I don't know what I have done to deserve this. I'm only a foreigner." And Boaz said, "Yes, I know. I know all about how you left with your mother-in-law from Moab, the land of your ancestors and your family, to come here to Bethlehem and live with total strangers. May the Lord, whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you greatly for this." And Ruth said, "Mate, I'm glad that I pleased you, my Lord, and may I continue to do so." A little while later, it came time for a meal, and Boaz called over to Ruth and said, "Come on over, eat with us. Dip your bread into the sour wine." And he gave her some of the roasted grain, and Ruth ate her fill, and she even had some left over. And when Ruth went back to work, he told his foreman again, "Why don't you leave some of the heads of barley behind on purpose? Let her pick them up. It's okay." And so at the end of the day, Ruth took all of her grain that she had and she beat it out and it filled up her basket so it was overflowing. And she took that back to Naomi along with the food that Boaz had given her during the meal. And Naomi was overwhelmed. She said, "Where did you get all of this? Whose field did you work in? May God bless whoever helped you with all of this." And then Ruth told her all about Boaz. And Naomi exclaimed, "Oh, bless him. By the way, did you know that he is one of our relatives? One of this family's redeemers?" And Ruth said, "Not only that, he wants me to come back every day during the harvest. He wants me to stay in his fields and follow his workers around." And Naomi was pleased and said, "You should do that, my daughter. You will be safe in his fields. No one will bother you. Don't go into anyone else's fields." And so this is how Ruth worked the harvest every day in Boaz's fields all the way through the barley harvest. And then she did the wheat harvest as well, working in Boaz's fields until about the early summer. Hedwig of Antwerp, which is now Belgium, lived in the 13th century, was a contemporary of St. Francis. She was, as the commentators about her life said, was a fool for God. It's too bad that she was not in a formal religious order in which she could express her great compassion and love for others. She was instead a lay practitioner. She was of an order of women. She was of high birth and education, and she traveled extensively, and she penned these words of this poem, which I love, which I thought fit in very, very well to this chapter of Ruth. The madness of love is a blessed fate. And if we understood this, we would seek no other. It brings into unity that which was divided. And this is the truth. Bitterness, it makes sweet. It makes the stranger a neighbor. And what was lowly, it raises high. Our object lessons today are things that attach themselves. Staples, tape, paper clips, glue. I brought in model glue. I was told that this is extremely good glue. If you want something to stick, take that home with you. It's like Gorilla Glue. They hold things together. Everything around us is held together by something. Screws, pillars hold up this structure that we're in. The cars that you drove here have bolts on the tires. What holds people together? What holds people together?
Love.
Love. Thank you. Love is the glue that holds people together. Sadly, sometimes we have some screws loose. We're not held very close together sometimes. We forget to bring our glue with us. We think that just because we live in the same neighborhood or go and work in the same workplace or go to school with that person, that we're attached to them somehow, but we might not treat them with a lot of love. So the first time we have conflict, the first time there's turmoil, what happens? We're torn apart. People need to be held together by love. We need the glue. Don't forget the glue. And where does love come from? Comes from God. Even though love is madness, as our poet said, and it sometimes is mad, heck, some of God's ideas are crazy, aren't they? They don't make sense. It doesn't make sense that Ruth chose to cling to Naomi the way she did. I'm going to go where you go. Against conventional wisdom, crazy. It doesn't make sense for Boaz to be so nice to her, a foreign woman who is taking the rest of his crop that's left over. But yet, there's love which makes them do that. Love is a blessed fate. A blessed fate, the poet says. In 1 John 4, it says that God is love. Everything that is love comes from God. And we believe that God is good, don't we? And there's nothing done by God that isn't good, at least good for us, or at least ultimately good. God is in this action of love and generosity and family and romantic love. It's not just a coincidence, I think, that she ends up in the field of Boaz. Remember how bitter Naomi was last week? Bitter, she called. Don't call me Naomi, she said. Call me Mara. Call me bitter. I'm bitter. I'm mad at God. God has raised a fist against me. Not only am I a widow, I have no sons. Everything's been taken away from me. I've come back empty. Now her tune has changed, hasn't it? She's excited for her daughter, whom she calls daughter now. Not just a daughter-in-law, not just somebody who married her son, a daughter. She's excited for these feelings of love that Ruth and Boaz seem to be sparking. The poet continues, if we understood this, if we understood that love is a blessed fate, we would seek nothing else but love. How often do we seek other things other than love and ask God for things that are less than love? Seek nothing else, the poet says. I read a story this week about a man who had a vision when he was young, and he was out in the woods helping his father, and there were three women that appeared to him. And the first woman tells him that, if you choose me, I will make you the most powerful man in the world. Second one says, if you choose me, I will make you the most influential and respected man in the world. The third one says, if you choose me, you will find the love of your life. He chooses the third woman, who gives him love. Now, the rest of the story is filled with lots of love, but also lots of heartache and tragedy. And then he's asked later in the story, would you do it again if you had to choose 1,000 times? Would you still choose what I have to offer? And the man says, yes, I will. I would choose love over those other things. How quickly we forget what's really important. All these worries about what will I do with myself now that I don't have a husband, I have no sons, how will I take care of myself? God answers it with a story of love, with a connection of love. The poet continues, brings into unity what was once divided. So I looked up a little bit about Moab. Moab was a country where people were actually from the same ethnic stock as the Israelites, which means they didn't look much different. And they spoke the same language, just with a different dialect. Yet they were excluded mostly from the life of Israel. They were considered outsiders, foreigners. Boaz didn't care. Boaz saw somebody in need and reached out and made a special allowance for somebody who was a foreigner, as he remembers his scriptures, to care for the widows and the foreigners. Moab, a country divided from Israel. To women from Moab, now united with Israel, who, as we're learning in Sunday school, are ancestors of Jesus. Bitterness made sweet. Naomi's excitement just pulses through this chapter. Love is the best recipe for a change of heart, for a bitter heart, for a heart that's experienced ache, a heart that mourns. Love is the best recipe in order to turn it around. Nothing less would do. To make the stranger a neighbor, it's common that we condemn those sometimes on public assistance. We say that they're a burden. We may find it hard to imagine that an immigrant, somebody seeking asylum, might be for us a redeemer. For us, a redeemer. Instead of the other way around all the time. It works both ways. Boaz is called a redeemer in this story. Somebody who is able to help these two women from their fate. But later on, we see how Ruth also redeems Boaz, giving him the one thing that he lacked, love and a family. By being people of compassion and acceptance, we honor ourselves in the eyes of God. We cannot be the people of God and accomplish our mission without this, without accepting what God has deemed clean. People. Peter, in the Acts of the Apostles, has this grand dream that's kind of bizarre, actually, where these animals are split in half, and he's telling them, I won't eat that, God. That's unclean. And God says, why are you calling unclean what is clean? People are beloved by God. To raise the lowly high, the poet continues, love has the power to give people the undergirding they need to soar. The confidence. Children who have been loved have the greatest chance in life to do great things. They can be all that they were designed to be. If it starts with love, those without that often struggle, as we know. For Ruth and Naomi, they were lowly. They were forced to glean from the fields, to just pick up what was extra, to rely on someone else's help if they would have them. And Boaz would have them. She worked hard. Ruth did, it says. She took very little breaks. I think by giving someone a chance in life, by believing in somebody, many times, not all the time, but many times that person will work hard to earn what you have given them. Think about a time in your life where someone believed in you. When someone said, yes, I'll stand by you. I'll help you. When someone was especially kind to you, someone that didn't have to, when someone accepted you despite who you were. None of us can make it through life all by ourselves. None of us are completely self-made. We are God-made, God-made for each other. Remember how last week we talked about how we are made for one another, to depend on one another. Like Ruth and Naomi depended on each other. Somebody has been sent into your life, each and every one of you, to give you grace and love and acceptance. God is behind those things. It's not all random. It's not all just a coincidence. God is out there acting, loving through the people around us. God is in these actions in Ruth. God is active in your life. So think about what you will do to raise up lowly people, to make someone who might be bitter, to give them some sweetness. You, as the people of God, you have the power it takes. The power is the love of God in your hearts. It makes a difference, folks. It makes the biggest difference, I submit to you, in the world. Let us pray.